This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Professor Ken Sawyer from McCormick Theological Seminary in Chicago. Ken is talking with us by phone. Can you hear me all right, Ken?
Yes, I can.
Great. Thank you for spending some time in your office on a Sunday afternoon talking about books.
Thank you.
Books on Christian thought. Now, you read new books, recent books, books by living authors, but you also read old books. Why do you do that?
Well, I guess for a couple of reasons. I'm a recovering librarian by trade. I spent 20 years on one side of the reference desk interpreting a library collection for our students and also exploring all parts of the library. And then a few years ago, I turned to the other side of the reference desk. I teach church history at a McCormick Seminary here in Chicago, and so I continue to be a librarian, just not on the library staff, and continue to pursue the task of interpreting the past and the present and introducing my students to the range of resources in the libraries of the Chicago area and on the Internet as well.
I think it was a medieval English literature scholar, C.S. Lewis, who said he thought people should read at least two older books for every recent book that they read. What percentage would you recommend?
Well, I like that percentage. And I think it was Dr. Johnson, Samuel Johnson, the great writer of dictionaries, who said that a young person should read 5 hours a day so that when he's an old person, he wouldn't have to read 5 hours a day. So, you know, the percentages are negotiable, it seems, but the mandate is the same, to find some time in our very busy lives to actually be able to sit down and to engage a text or a hypertext, either online or in your lap, and to create some space for engaging a text and to be open to the process of even transformation. So I'm willing to negotiate those percentages just so some time is set.
I had not encountered the Dr. Johnson statement, but my mother, who's 85, is also a recovering librarian, as you say. She's a retired librarian from the University of Illinois, where she worked in cataloging, but she's always been a reader, and she still reads four large print books. It takes her about a week and a half now. She was doing four a week for many years, but she'll read a biography, and she'll read a novel, and she'll read a romance, and she'll read a mystery. And at 85, that's pretty impressive.
Yes, it is. Not only the amount, but also the range. I think perhaps, and certainly all of us read from our backgrounds as well. Growing up, I read very, very little fiction. I thought that the world was a world of facts and a world of fact books as well. Loved reference books, loved almanacs, loved dictionaries and encyclopedias. And only when I grew up to adulthood did I really discover the world of fiction and the truths of fiction and the ways by which the great truths can be presented in some ways that they cannot be presented factually, but only in terms of literary form.
I was just the opposite. I got hooked on fiction, science fiction, and mysteries, and all kinds of kids' books, and then eventually Mark Twain growing up. And and so I read more fiction than anything else, and I guess I still do.
Well, I'm growing
only,
up.
Only later appreciated other kinds of work.
I'm growing up into your childhood.
Well, let's make the transition from talking about reading in general to talking about our announced topic, which is some books that you've been reading recently in the large category of Christian thought. Mm-hmm. What have you been reading?
Well, since I teach in a seminary, I teach in a school which is somewhere in between local communities of faith and universities. I have the really wonderful task of working with women and men who are preparing for ministry. So the majority of my reading is in preparation for teaching and to be in conversation with these seminarians. It's a remarkable place to be. It's a great opportunity. It's a joyful place to teach and to work, also quite challenging as well. Among the things that I've been reading have been materials for my courses. For example, the curriculum of the history of Christianity is undergoing some wonderful revisions and challenges and changes. We have recently adopted a new way of doing church history that is far broader, challenges a kind of Eurocentric sense of the history of Christianity, as if church history began with Martin Luther. We're trying to broaden things a bit and to reclaim the movement feel of Christianity as well. It's a world religion with centers of development, not only within the Roman world, but also beyond the borders of the Roman Empire. And so the recent textbook by Dale Irvin and Scott Sundquist, History of the World Christian Movement, is a nice way of dipping into the broadening of the categories in the teaching of the history of the church to recognize the same recognizable story, but also to recognize some of the dissenting traditions and also to recognize the diversity of regions and language and cultural forms within which Christianity flourished, and then also to see the ways in which Christianity was in constructive dialogue with, as well as sometimes contention with Judaism and with Islam. So Irvin and Sundquist, that textbook is really very helpful. I also think that the popular press has provided some really great titles just recently. And my favorite one right now is by Richard Fletcher. Richard Fletcher taught until very recently at the University of York. He retired and has produced a couple of very useful texts since that retirement date. The book that I have found most useful, it's a brief book, a paperback, Penguin, is entitled The Cross and the Crescent. Maybe some of your listeners have also read his work. This book, The Cross and the Crescent, looks at the interaction of Christians and Muslims from the time of the prophet down to the time of the Reformations of the 16th century, with a particular focus on Jews and Muslims and Christians in Andalusia, in Spain, during the medieval period, but also recognizing the place of Jews and Christians in a constructive relationship with Muslims in Baghdad, when the U of B, University of Baghdad, was founded in the 8th century and was a center of the translation and of engagement with the classical traditions. It's a very important period in Islamic history when Islam was well-suited to open up to the riches and also the ambiguities of the classical heritage. So that's a great book as well. Maybe a more popular book is entitled The Ornament of the World, which looks specifically and more in terms of a literary presentation of Christian, Muslim, and Jewish living together in Andalusia.
And who's the author of The Ornament of the World?
Maria Menocal.
How is the last name spelled?
Menocal. And that's been on the bestseller list, and it focuses on the caliphate, and then also the Christian kingdoms in Spain, down to the time of the expulsion of the Jews in 1492, which Fletcher then picks up very nicely, speaking of the ways in which the what becomes the Ottoman Empire provides a welcoming place for those Jews who had been expelled from Christian Spain. So that cultural engagement and interdependence is a theme of these books. And we need to be reminded of that, I think, especially because the dominant model that is presented today is one of a clash of civilizations. And while we need to be aware of and prudent about contemporary conflicts, we also need to recognize that contemporary conflicts are but one chapter in a book with many chapters.
We're talking today with Professor Ken Sawyer from McCormick Theological Seminary in Chicago about books on Christian thought. And we will be taking phone calls from listeners later in the program. But let me let listeners know at this point that this is the time of year when WILL broadcasting power goes down during this program. And so although at this moment this program can be heard from Chicago to Indianapolis, in about 5 minutes the power of WILL goes down considerably. So if you're hearing this program and suddenly you're not able to hear it, that happens at sundown. And because of the change from daylight saving to Central Standard Time that happened today, that means that happens during Keeping the Faith. There are two things you can do. One, you can go to your computer and go online to listen to this program, and you can do that by going to WILL.UIUC.edu. And when you get WILL in front of you, then you can just go to AM 580 and listen live via computer anywhere in the world, really. Again, the place to go is WILL.UIUC.edu. And also, if you've come to this program late or if you need to leave before Professor Sawyer finishes talking about various books he recommends, in a couple weeks, this whole program will be archived at that same website. So then you just need to go to Keeping the Faith and look for this date or Professor Sawyer or our topic of books on Christian thought. And that'll be there for a couple years. So I just wanted to warn listeners that if the program fades from your radio, that's what's happened. And those are two things you can do. Getting back to our guest, Professor Ken Sawyer. Ken, you teach graduate students. Now, these books you just mentioned that talk about both Christianity and Islam, the last one you mentioned is popular and on the bestseller list, as you mentioned. But the first two, how accessible are they for just the average person in a pew or at a university who's not a graduate student in religion?
Yes, that's a really good question. The Ornament of the World is very accessible, I try to bring I try to ask the same question of myself when I bring these books into congregations, when I am teaching mostly in adult education classes in communities of faith congregations mostly. So what's accessible and what's not? The same question is brought forward in a recent set of biographical studies of Augustine. So what's accessible and what's not accessible is a very good question.
What about, say, the cross and the crescent?
It's marvelously accessible.
Okay.
And for our first-year seminarians, many of whom have not prepared by studying the Westminster Catechism and memorizing it, they just instead arrive, you know, with the same kind of cultural questions that that all of us have, right? And so it's true that the textbooks that we use are primarily focused on people who have not read the story before. So the early church, which seems like a very distant place, is in fact a very lively place that has many similarities to our current moment of empire. It's a different world with different historical questions and different philosophical orientations, but there are some perennial questions that are asked that you can find asked in texts throughout the history of humanity. And so in some ways we can observe questions asked by people in very different historical periods, while their answers would certainly be different than the answers that we provide, we can at least resonate with some of the questions asked.
What are some of the other books that you think general listenership would appreciate?
Well, this new biography of Augustine, which has received a little bit of a splash lately, or the briefer studies by Gary Wills on the particular books of Augustine's master work, the Confessions. Augustine died in the first part of the 5th century. He's one of Africa's many gifts to the whole world. He is a marvelously interesting person, but also shot through with contradictions. And so his works are still very much formative in the curriculum of modern universities, but also especially of seminaries and religious studies programs. He has been the target of some rather severe critiques and revisions by contemporary scholars, perhaps foremost among them Elaine Pagels, who teaches at Princeton University. Her works on the Gnostic Gospels are familiar to many folk, and indeed her recent book, Beyond Belief, which looks at the Gospel of Thomas, one of those apocryphal books, one of those books that is not considered to be part of the acceptable standard or canon of Christian scripture, but still tells us a lot about the early church period or the communities of faith in the early church period, that Elaine Pagels has tended to focus on a rather severe critique of the role of Augustine. And so, you know, for her very popular books like Beyond Belief or the Gnostic Gospels or Adam and Eve and the Serpent, those are three different titles that she has published in the last 20 years. Many of my students arrive at seminary not having studied religion in college, but having read popular texts about the early church or about themes about ultimate reality and meaning and purpose. So in some ways, in some of my classes, maybe your experience has been similar, we have to get to Augustine or to the early church through a filter of contemporary popular presentations. And because the current approach to Augustine, or Augustine, however you wish to pronounce his name, because that approach is so negative right now, it's kind of difficult for contemporary readers, either in popular or scholarly works, to hear what he might have to say about his own life, about his own family, about his own place in the world as a person who was part of the Latin world, but also part of the North African Christian tradition. So there's a new biography about Augustine by James J. O'Donnell. Some of your listeners may know him, James J. O'Donnell, because of his work on issues of instructional technology. He wrote a wonderful book a few years ago called "Avatars of the World," "Avatars of the Word," talking about texts and hypertext and readers online. He also put together a critical commentary on the Confessions of Augustine. And so this new biography was looked forward to by many folks. And it came out last spring and has gotten a bit of a splash. When I have read it, I've been a little bit surprised. He doesn't seem to like Augustine that much. I mean, we learn a lot about the rhetorical world of the 4th and 5th century. We learn a lot about the circle of Augustine. We learn a lot about some of the tensions in his own life and the negotiations that he pursued to try to make sense of his own life. But O'Donnell is convinced that Augustine was also a bit deceptive and trying to pull one over on his readers. Now, when I read that, I think, oh my goodness! I guess my devotion to an earlier biography of Augustine is showing itself. I mean, many of your listeners will have read Peter Brown's biography of Augustine from 1970, entitled "Augustine of Hippo." That's been a biography that has been so influential over the last 35 years. It is an eloquent and empathic engagement with Augustine, not uncritical, but certainly empathic. And the current effort by James J. O'Donnell seeks to pull back on that empathy in order to see some other aspects of Augustine that contemporary readers might profit from knowing.
We're talking with Professor Ken Sawyer, if you've joined Keeping the Faith after we began, a professor of church history and a librarian from McCormick Theological Seminary, a Presbyterian graduate school, a place where people go to become trained as pastors or one step in being religious scholars. If you'd like to ask him a question or if you have a book that you'd like to share with him and our listeners, do give us a call. Anywhere the program is heard, including on the Internet, you may call us toll-free 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL, anywhere the program is heard. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, you may call us on punch in 333-9455, and that will access several local lines, 333-WILL, if you're in the Champaign-Urbana area.
Is there some way of dialing Ira Glass directly?
I wish there were.
Yeah.
but he will be on immediately following Ken Sawyer tonight.
in talking about Augustine, I just did want to mention another person who's writing a lot lately and has written such wonderful things, and some of them are very accessible. Margaret Miles, who taught at Harvard Divinity School for many years, was among the first of the tenured women professors there, and then she served as dean of the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley, California. She produced a wonderful book entitled Desire and Delight, which is a reading of Augustine's Confessions. And among the many wonderful things she does in this little book is to pose the question, what does a contemporary woman have to do with this patriarchal narrative? How is it that strategies of reading these ancient texts, how is it that they can be liberative rather than constraining and constrictive? And she poses a similar question of other books and suggests interesting strategies to read as an engaged reader and sometimes as a disobedient reader. You know how sometimes you can read texts that you really have some problems with, but you struggle with the text, you wrestle with the text, you argue with the text. She suggests some of the strategies in her very wise book entitled Reading for Life, which was published about 10 years ago now. I often suggest it to my students, and I have returned to it in part because it's a book which displays the author's wisdom and humility. It is one of those books that is properly understood to point to the very heart of the humanities, not some arrogant program to impose, but rather a way of inquiry which might indeed help us in our individual and collective search for wisdom. I'm eager to find authors like Margaret Miles.
We have a caller waiting on a local line, on line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Ken Sawyer. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. I'm a nurse, and my favorite expression is hardening of the categories. You mentioned hardening of something, the categories. My question to you is, how do you practice that?
If I understand your question correctly, one of the sore temptations of
yes.
Deeply held beliefs is to forget that our deepest held beliefs are also in the process of changing, and I hope becoming more generous, more humane, and more reflective of the religious traditions in which we stand. I have been part of many different Protestant traditions. I was raised in a loving household, and I continue to live into the love shown me by people along the way in my life. So that, and some of them are just profoundly conservative and dogmatic, and have very hard categories, and they're still praying for me. And but I'm grateful for that. And others who would invite me to enlarge my perspectives a little bit, and to recognize that I am in need of being in a constructive relationship, even with those with whom I disagree rather sharply.
Yes.
How is it that that you resist that process of the hardening of the categories?
That's a loaded question. Anyhow, I resist it is I don't resist it. Mm. But anyway, thank you so much for your insights and your knowledge and your wisdom. I'm a recovering nurse, but not a librarian.
Well,
thank you so much for your insights.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Wonderful to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. When we are when we're talking about the various various books about Saint Augustine, which of the three that you mentioned can do any of them reflect feminist perspectives? Does the Margaret Miles Desire and Delight deal with some of those kind of issues? I'm thinking particularly of his relationship with his mother,
yes.
Monica.
Yes, it does. In this book, Desire and Delight, she poses a set of questions that we would identify, and she identifies as drawn from that gift to the whole world, which is feminist theology, new perspectives, new questions, and a recognition that faith and faithfulness is as often expressed through resistance as through acquiescence, right? That that if we look through the history of faith communities, if we look for the ways by which women and men express themselves as agents of God's grace or self-identity, the formation of a self, we may find some strategies of resistance as well as strategies of obedience or of acquiescence. You know, there's so many wonderful books about questions of power and of agency. A book which I continue to find just extremely helpful is a book that was published, again, about 10 years ago, but it is just so very current, and it is by a woman who taught at Princeton Seminary for several years. Her name is Carol Lakey Hess, H-E-S-S. And the book that she wrote while there at Princeton is entitled Caretakers of Our Common House. Now, it's, again, a very wise book, looking at the issue of faith formation or spiritual formation among girls and young women, and the ways in which a male-oriented or male-dominated tradition may challenge or bracket or silence while attempting to empower, name, and liberate, right? And so these are oftentimes contradictory truths that are experienced by many girls and some boys as well within religious communities. It's a brave and rich book, Caretakers of Our Common House.
By Carol Lakey Hess.
Yes. She left Princeton and worked as a novelist for a couple of years, and now I'm very, and in addition to that good work, I'm just delighted that she's teaching again. She's teaching at Claremont Seminary, Claremont School of Theology, in just outside of Los Angeles.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Professor Ken Sawyer from McCormick Theological Seminary, a graduate school for Presbyterians and others in Chicago. We'll be getting back to Ken in just a moment. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these programs. Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking with Jean Marie Peacock from New Orleans, Reverend Peacock is a pastor of a church that was destroyed along with her home in New Orleans with the Hurricane Katrina. She'll be talking about her experience and experience of her congregation and others next week. That's November 6th at 5 p.m. here on WILL AM 580. On November 13, our guest will be Eugene Barnes. We'll be talking about affordable housing, the Central Illinois Organizing Project, the Metanoia Project that Eugene Barnes heads up. November 20th, we'll be talking about the annual Peace Bazaar with Claire Zoak and Joan Nelshoppen. On November 27th, we'll be talking about the Secret Gospel of Mark with a skeptic about that gospel, Stephen Carlson, will be talking with us, who's written The Gospel Hoax. Those are some of the programs coming up on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead. I remind listeners that support for these Keeping the Faith programs is provided in part by the University YMCA here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. The Y is located at 1001 South Wright Street, the corner of Wright and Chalmers. The Y has been on Wright Street in one building or another for 132 years here on this campus. It is the oldest continuous student organization at the university, and for all these decades has been helping develop student leaders by providing opportunities for community service, for social action, and reflection. So, since 1873, the Y has been very active on this campus. Coming up this week at the Y are a couple of interesting programs. We have two regular lectures, one on Tuesday noon, and the last in that series is coming up November 1st, Tuesday at noon, Professor Winton Solberg, Professor Emeritus of History here at the university, will be talking on Creating a Great American University, Edmund J. James and the University of Illinois from 1904 to 1920. Professor Solberg is the author of the history of this university, two volumes of which are out, and we are eager to hear his talk to us, and there'll be time for question and answers Tuesday. That's November 1st at the Y. If you'd like to order a lunch from our Thai restaurant, do call the Y, 337-1500. But, of course, you can come to hear the free lecture even without buying a lunch. You can bring your own. That's fine. And this Friday, coming up as part of our Friday Forum series that goes back almost 80 years on this campus, every Friday noon, a different lecture. This time our topic is Conscience in Action for this semester. And Ruth Mininger from 10,000 Villages will be talking Friday at noon, November 4, on Conscience in Business, Responsibility in Consumption. 10,000 Villages is the oldest fair trade organization in North America and is a founding member of the International Fair Trade Association. So if you'd like to learn more about 10,000 Villages that provides decent income to third world people by marketing their handicrafts, if you'd like to hear Ruth Mininger talk, that's Friday at the Y. Again, if you'd like to reserve lunch, 337-1500. One other Y-related announcement, Communiversity is a chance for people to teach a class or take a class on a wide variety of subjects as part of sort of the free university movement that's been around 30 years or so. And the University Y is looking for instructors for the Communiversity classes that start up in January, second semester. So these are non-credit courses. Anybody can take them. They're very inexpensive. But the people who teach them can charge a little bit, and so you can make a little income by teaching something you're excited about. If you have something, a skill, a craft, something you enjoy doing, knowledge you'd like to share, consider teaching a class at the Y. You can go to our website, universityymca.org/communiversity, or if you want to call Paul or Becca at the Y, 337-1514 to talk about teaching a class at the Y next semester. On Focus 580 here on WILL this week, there's one particular program of interest to people who listen to Keeping the Faith. That's Thursday at 11. David Inge will be talking with Kurt Goring, who's the Senior Deputy Executive Director of Amnesty International. The work of Amnesty International is very important, and the local chapter of Amnesty here in central Illinois is centered at the University YMCA, where I'm the executive director. So I'm particularly interested in hearing Kurt Goring be interviewed on the work of Amnesty International. We have many university students who are very involved in Amnesty, and we're delighted that David Inge is interviewing the director. Well, back to our guest today on Keeping the Faith. We're talking about books particularly in the broad category of Christian thought, with a professor of church history, Ken Sawyer, from a seminary in Chicago. What other books do you have to tell us about, Ken?
Well, I'm just nice to hear Wynton Solberg's name. I am indebted to him and his scholarly work in American Puritanism. His book on Cotton Mather, The Christian Philosopher, is a very good book, very useful book. His work as an editor and providing a commentary on that 18th century work. So it's good to hear his name. When I'm casting about, I've just been so struck by a couple of masterful teachers, and I would certainly put Margaret Miles in that category. And certainly Peter Brown in that category. I would also include the contemporary scholar of the Hebrew Scriptures, Walter Brueggemann. His last name is spelled B-R-U-E-G-G-E-M-A-N-N. For many years, he taught, Walter Brueggemann taught at Columbia Seminary, just outside of Atlanta. He had lots of opportunities to go teach PhD students, and he turned them down, turned those offers down, because he wanted to be engaged in preparing women and men who were a part of lively communities of faith and part of the ongoing conversation that is the best of theology, right? I mean, that's what theology is. It's just, it's a conversation about important topics, and it's a conversation that is not bound by any particular chronological period. We might find wisdom in some texts that have been written several thousand years ago. There might be some addition to a vital tradition across boundaries that are very important now, but maybe less important to the person who's seeking wisdom, right? So Walter Brueggemann is a master teacher and an excellent writer. Among the books that he's written lately, he's written or collected essays that he's written. He writes a lot about biblical theology or about the question of canon and the place of scriptural authority. In our great effort to avoid fundamentalisms of all kinds, many people are afraid to read the scriptures, as if to take the scriptures seriously will inevitably lead someone into some form of grotesque, overdetermined reading. It's unfortunate. The place of scripture in the lives of individuals and within communities of interpretation. We need to just recognize that scripture is too important to leave it simply and solely to people who disagree with us. And we need also to recognize that we can learn from women and men who disagree sharply with us or might be in a kind of contentious relationship with us. Walter Brueggemann has written a wonderfully accessible Introduction to the Old Testament, that's its title, An Introduction to the Old Testament, published in 2003. In it, he takes up the task of telling the story of the Hebrew Scriptures, looking, you know, stepping back enough to identify themes and people and kind of points of tension within the Hebrew Scriptures. And he is also particularly attentive to the ongoing conversation among Jews and Christians and between Jews and Christians concerning the relationship to the Hebrew text and the ongoing topics of comparing our readings and recognizing the strengths and insights of each other's readings of the Hebrew text. It's a wonderful book, An Introduction to the Old Testament.
By Walter Brueggemann. And let me give our phone numbers again, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. That's 333-WILL. We'll put you on the air live with our guest today. You can ask a question or make a comment or even suggest a book that you've enjoyed recently in this general theme. Elsewhere, you may call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. And I'm sorry, Ken, I interrupted. Go ahead. Go right ahead.
No, it's quite all right. Some other books that Walter Brueggemann has written lately. He has a second edition of a book he wrote a few years ago called David's Truth, looking at the role of King David and the depiction of David in the Psalms and in the books of Kings, so that his role within the evolving story of Israel is very neatly and very generously presented there, with lots of questions for Christians and lots of points of listening to and learning from Jewish scholars and Christian scholars. So it's another example of a very generous way of pursuing his calling, which is as a teacher. A teacher who seeks to be in service to those who are serving in communities of faith.
Ken, you mentioned how important good teachers have been in your life. What is your path to being a professor? Where have you been in school?
Well, I, too, am a graduate of a state university. I'm a graduate of the University of Nebraska, and that's where my family was living at the time I graduated from high school. I went to a Bible college for my freshman year, and then I transferred to the University of Nebraska. The dean of students invited me into his office of this little Bible college at the end of my first year, and he said that he thought that I would be happier somewhere else. But I also think that he was actually saying that he would be happier if I was somewhere else, too. I'm very grateful for my time there. I learned a lot, and just really very grateful for the witness and faithfulness of the people that I was able to spend time with there. Then at the University of Nebraska, a number of very good scholars, including some classics and historians. John Yost is a name that comes to mind, my first teacher in Reformation history. Then I went to Trinity Evangelical Divinity School here in suburban, just north of Chicago, in Deerfield, and was a student of some really excellent historians and theologians, David Wells and John Woodbridge, and especially, though, Mark Knoll, who teaches at Wheaton College, but who would teach from time to time at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School. This is a kind of cadre of very influential evangelical scholars who have been very productive in the last 20 to 25 years. They were sending people to various schools, but I wanted to come to the University of Chicago. So I did, and found a very, very welcoming home at the University of Chicago, here on the south side of Chicago. My teachers were Gerald Brower and a name that many of your listeners will know, Martin Marty, Lutheran scholar, but also was able to study with the remarkable Langdon Gilkey, who just passed away last year, and Bernard McGinn, medievalist and wonderful teacher, and Robert Grant. Some of your listeners may know of Robert Grant's work in early church history. It is a rich group of teachers, and I've been fortunate enough to remain here in Hyde Park, so I see some of these people. And since my school is in Hyde Park, right next to the University of Chicago, so it's a great blessing to be in a place where I can see my teachers and to continue to use the libraries upon which I've become dependent. But also to find a place for the stories for my own family as well. My wife and I live here on the south side. We've raised three daughters here on the South Side, and they've been products of the Chicago Public Schools, and we've been fortunate enough as well to be members of a wonderful, lively congregation, Progressive Community Church, at the corner of 48th and Wabash. It's some of your listeners may know that congregation. The pastor's name is B. Herbert Martin, and I would count him to be one of my teachers, to see someone who is engaged in the pursuit of justice and the practice of ministry, you know, simultaneously.
Yeah. Our guest today, Ken Sawyer, is also a highly respected teacher and much appreciated by seminary students. But Ken, you have this method when you're teaching of moving around. How can you stay hooked to this telephone for this whole hour?
You may have seen some of those commercials about anxious leg syndrome. I don't know if there's a professorial manifestation of that syndrome. But
well, thank you for doing it. We have another caller waiting again on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead.
Hi, I want to ask a question. I actually just read in the News Gazette about author who deals with Christian Jewish dialogue and also Christian issues, Michael Wisherod. I might be pronouncing his name wrong.
How is the last name spelled?
I think it's Schogrod. There might not be an S, but I'm sure. Anyway, in this week's News Gazette Friday, and it was also looked at it subsequently online, and he's got an interesting, he writes at length about Christian issues, even though he's a Jewish theologian, supposedly.
Now, what's the title of that book?
Oh, I'd have to go online.
Don't remember. Okay, that's fine.
He's got an, hold on a second, if you want.
No, it's fine. It's all right. Go ahead.
It's fine. But what I was interested in is he's got his position, he goes at length about arguing that in Christian terms and various Christian, call it Christians, Gentiles who become Christians are free of the Hebrew, let's say, rules and laws. But he argues that Jews who become Christians or Christians in general are not free of the Mosaic laws. And he even had a dialogue or letter to Cardinal Lustiger, I believe the name is, who's the Catholic cardinal in France, who was born a Jew, and he argues that the cardinal is Christian rules required to obey Mosaic rules. Anyway, I was interested. I would wonder if your guest has any thoughts about this matter or is familiar with these issues.
Yes. Well, thank you for that cluster of questions, really, a cluster of important questions, particularly as someone who stands within the Christian tradition. It behooves me to ask, what is my relationship to Judaism? What is my relationship to historic Jews and to contemporary Jews? To always be attentive to opportunities to listen and to pursue ways of being instructed as well by the broad and specific content of Judaism. Now, for the first couple of centuries of we just need to recognize, of course, Jesus is Jewish, right? The most important and influential Jew in all of history, right? And that the Jesus movement emerges from within Judaism, and that the Roman destruction of the temple in the year 70 of the Common Era is a catastrophe out of which emerges rabbinical Judaism, that's also the context in which the Jesus movement also is developing. So that the constructive interactions and also some of the contentious interactions of Judaism and the Jesus movement are part of that first, second, and third century of the Common Era. Indeed, there were individuals who were participating in Jewish synagogues and in Christian churches throughout the length of the second century. And indeed, John Chrysostom, a couple centuries later, writing in Constantinople, is complaining that there are Christians still doing that at the beginning of the 5th century, still participating in the synagogues as well as in the Christian churches. And he, as one of these great boundary maintainers, saying that Christians need to be aware of these distinctions and to maintain those distinctions. In the postmodern world that we're living into, some of those distinctions have been less significant or useful for individuals and also for communities of faith. There are now, you know, the Jews for Jesus movement or the Messianic Christian communities are challenging those boundaries in ways that make many people uncomfortable. So, as for me, I hesitate to attempt to name an orthodoxy for someone else or some other group, but I also want to be attentive to and very, very interested in listening to the ways in which other communities of faith either establish or maintain boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
I just was wondering, are you familiar with the author at all?
Mm-hmm. Well, I know, and I similarly cannot spell the last name of the author that you mentioned. And my colleague, Robert Caffey, here at McCormick Seminary, who is deeply involved in and widely respected in the contemporary discussions and dialogue, especially of Jews and Christians, I'm always deferring quite properly to his engagement with these texts and these issues more deeply than I am.
Okay, actually the spelling, let me give it to you and I'll get off. W-Y-S-C-H-O-G-R-O-D, and his first name is Michael, and he's at the University of Houston, among other places.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. And if there are other listeners who'd like to call and talk to our guest, we have about another 5 minutes to go. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455. Talking with Ken Sawyer. Ken, you haven't mentioned any novels. Now, I know you came to novels late, as you told us in your confession earlier. But what novels are there about right now that deal with some Christian themes in important ways?
Yes. Well, there are a couple that I've discovered George Eliot and am thrilling to the pages of George Eliot. I read Daniel Deronda last year, and again, you know, talking about Christian-Jewish relations in the 19th century from this woman, George Eliot, who is, again, just so immensely wise a writer and so insightful in observing the human condition and the horizon of hope for individuals and communities. In contemporary writers, I have been reading the works of a German author who died in December of 2001, W.G. Sebald, S-E-B-A-L-D. His works are sad works, and they are elegiac. They are mournful. It's not really as upbeat an endorsement as you might be looking for, and yet they're very important. He is an author engaged in seeking to enter into a conversation about loss and suffering and complicity. He's part of this post-World War II group of contemporary German authors who are seeking to raise the issue of complicity in World War II. He has a very interesting method of doing it. He says you can't talk about this directly. It's too big. It's too gigantic. It's too all-encompassing. You must go about it in a kind of amalgam of memoir and travelogue and through allusion. So his books like Vertigo or Austerlitz or The Immigrants are stories that they read rather like travelogues or like a kind of rambling memoir, but they are deeply engaged in the experience of loss or suffering. Another book in a similar theme is by Anne Michaels, Canadian author. Her book, Fugitive Pieces, was published about 4 years ago, and I confess that I've read it several times just because she's clearly a poet who writes novels, and each page and each paragraph and many of the sentences themselves are poetic, and they fit together in a marvelous way. This too is set in Canada and also in Greece, but it deals with those who have been whose lives have been broken into pieces following the Second World War, and some of the consequences of engaging the issue of memory and the importance of memory. So whether it's Augustine or Anne Michaels or W.G. Sebald or George Eliot, each of these authors deals with the issue of memory and recollection in ways that I found very helpful and properly disturbing. And we ought to allow ourselves to be disturbed by the gospel and disturbed by contemporary writing and disturbed by, in a positive and provocative sense, disturbed by those efforts that are good faith efforts of women and men, regardless of format or genre or tradition.
We are out of time, and I want to thank our callers on the program tonight, and of course our guest Ken Sawyer, professor of church history, former librarian at McCormick Theological Seminary in Chicago, located in Hyde Park. Thank you, Ken, for all of your suggestions of books in the general area of Christian thought. This is a program that deals with many different religious groups, but Christianity being the largest religion in this country and the world deserves some special thought from time to time. So we do want to thank our guest. Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be hearing a report from New Orleans from a pastor who's lost her church and home, Jean Marie Peacock. The following week, Eugene Barnes will be here November 13 talking about affordable housing. My name is Steve Shoemaker. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Chris Ayers never wanted to cover the war. He was perfectly content reporting on celebrity gossip in L.A. But through a twist of fate, he found himself embedded with Marines in Iraq, living in a Humvee and waiting for his death at the hands of the Republican Guard. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, on To the Best of Our Knowledge, a self-proclaimed coward covers the war. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 Central here on WILL Urbana.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the U of I Office of the Chancellor, supporting the Campus Charitable Fund Drive. Each year, contributions from U of I employees on the Urbana-Champaign campus help support 11 social service agencies and other nonprofit organizations. Information on how to give and how your donations will help our community is on the web at www.ccfd.uiuc.edu.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers after midnight. The low in the mid-40s with south winds around 10 miles per hour this evening, becoming light. Tomorrow, cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. The high in the mid-60s with southwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, decreasingly cloudy with a chance of showers, the low in the lower 40s with northwest winds around 10 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.